It's an honor now to introduce you all to host and producer of a show that we play here on Free Radio Santa Cruz called Unwelcome Guests, unwelcomeguests.org. Lynn Gary is on the line with me. Lynn, you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, you host and produce a two-hour program called Unwelcome Guests, correct?
That's right.
And what's the show about, and how long have you been producing it?
Well, I started the show in 2000, and in fact, I just did my 400th show, which completely amazes me.
Wow.
When I think about that way. You go from week to week, it doesn't seem like a big deal, but when you think about that amount of work over so long, it's kind of shocking. And, I described the show. I've never actually said this on the air, but on the website I have a little blurb that it's a program about wealth, power, and people's resistance to the corporate world order.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is that one of the main thrusts of the show is not really to cover news per se, but to cover the larger context in which the news happens, how things really operate, what the systems are, both of the things that oppress us, make the world the way it is, introducing other ideas and systems that could supplant these, which would make for a better world, etc. And so that's what I try to address on the show. And once again, I never say this on the air either, when I'm doing the show, but every week there is a unifying theme. It's a unifying theme that exists in my mind that helps me to pull the material together, because I always try to put things that relate to one another that amplify and create resonance and synergy, I think, to make things more illuminating. And so that's what I do with the show that I think probably is something that's intrinsic to its character as a program, because many people, they just say, well, this is happening and that's happening and whatever, so right, I'll put it in my show this week. And of course, that's what you do when you're doing news. And I said, well, I'm not going to be bound by that. If the talk that I have that somebody gave last week is related to an interview that somebody did 5 years ago, I'm going to play those together. If that's what I think creates like understanding and the energy behind understanding,
Right. That's great. Where do you get your material? I mean, where do you get all the speeches?
Well, I get it all over the place, but I would not be able to do this show the way I do it if not for the ANFOS Radio Project, Radio for All Net, which I'm one of the founders of.
Right.
And we founded that in 1997, and it was the first place that was an online, openly available repository for the audio of community radio producers and independent radio journalists and activist recorders and what have you. And so that way, even though I live in a little town in the country with a population of 2,100 people, I have access to things that are happening all over the world, and to be able to bring the voices to people of those who are speaking on something that I think is of importance, irrespective of where they spoke. Because if somebody spoke in Seattle, well, somebody will record that and put it up on the radio project. Right? Or if somebody spoke in Australia, they'll do the same.
Right.
And now at this point, of course, I have people that actually contact me, like other producers or individuals who say, hey, I have something that I think would be perfect for your show. Right? Because that's one of the benefits of longevity in a show, is a lot of people get to know of you and what you do, and if they have material that they would like to share with the world, they say, aha, this is a place where I can go to try to get it out.
Right, right.
And then, of course, I also, record and do interviews of things around here, but the show started, in fact, I didn't think it was going to be on all these different stations. It started out as a local show. And then as more and more stations began to carry it, it became, it basically morphed, because I was aware of people listening all over the place. And I can't say, well, you people who are listening on Freak Radio in Santa Cruz are, can't be less important than people who are listening where I live or some other place. So knowing that people were listening, I thought, well, I have to talk to people where they are, and now they're all over the place.
Right.
So I, you know, so when I do cover local things, I cover it, I choose things and cover them in a way that I think will have meaning and relevance to people no matter where they are.
How do you keep going? Like, you've been doing it for 8 years now. I mean, how do you keep from burning yourself out? I mean,
I don't know. Well, I do know. Well, okay. Here's what I have always expected to get. Well, when I started the show on my local radio station, for a variety of reasons, I was always expecting to get yanked off the air. It's not a community radio station. It's owned by a college, and it runs NPR. I mean, it's the only NPR station that my show airs on, right? And there are very few community people on it. And community people have no standing. If they decide they want to put something else on, you have just no recourse whatsoever. And I've always been expecting every week to be chucked off, because I think that, you know, they play Democracy Now! And other things like that, but I think that some of the stuff that I play, they think is pretty way out, you know.
Right.
So the approach I took, that I always take, is, you know, sometimes people take, you know, 2 weeks off or whatever for the summer, or whenever they take their vacation or that sort of thing, and do like reruns, and I never do anything like that.
Yeah, I noticed.
Because I said, I am one of the few people who actually has meaningful free speech in America, which is the right to have someone hear you when you speak. And that is incredibly precious. And so I approach the show every week as if it were my last. And
wow.
I say, is this material, if this were my last show, would I feel okay that this is what I broadcast on my last show? Would I feel okay about it? You know, would I say, God, it's too bad I did such a sloppy job on my last show. It's too bad I didn't go the extra mile now that it's gone. And so that's the attitude I've taken for 400 shows.
400 two-hour programs.
And so that's how it, and that's how, what keeps me going, because I, every time I treat it as the last show.
Wow. That's interesting. That's great. Again, we're talking with Lynn Gehry here, host and producer of Unwelcome Guests. Check out unwelcomeguests.org, the website. It's also at radioforall.net. That's radio, the number for all.net, which you are also, you helped start, right? When again did that
That's
start,
right.
Radio for All?
1997, we were actually open to use. We went we started in late 1996, and no one had ever done anything like this. I mean, computers were just getting sound on them. So, you know, we did a lot of experimentation and discussion and interviewed a whole lot of radio people and, you know, other people online to get input as to what would work and what could be done and formats and whatnot. And so our first iteration of it actually went online in the spring of 1997.
Wow.
So this is actually, we're coming on our 11th year.
Wow. That's incredible. And, I, you know, we use it all the time here at Free Radio. We play a lot of the stuff that's up there, including your show. I post a lot of things there. I post my show, Pop Defect Radio, and other folks here at the station as well use that source. It's not cheap, is it?
Well, you know, the only thing about it, I want to clarify there for people listening, It's totally free for anybody to use it. But of course, to maintain it, the people that provide bandwidth and whatnot, it's not free. So we basically have to raise about $500 a month to pay for our bandwidth. And this has evolved. When we started out, we had everything was donated to us. We had some server space donated on a nonprofit ISP in Canada, and something else was donated somewhere. Well, what happened over the years, of course, traffic got heavier, but also strange problems started to develop. And when we didn't have our own server, of course, the other ISPs, they wouldn't give our computer folks root access to the level they needed to be able to get in there and look problem solve. So finally we said, we need our own server. So that took it to one level. Then once we had our own server, well, now we had to pay for bandwidth. And we started out with just a couple of DSL lines, and soon that was swamped. And in fact, the more that we get, the more it's almost like we keep getting more bandwidth, but it's never empty.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a bunch of cars coming onto a freeway at rush hour, right? The only reason that there aren't more cars on there is because it's already full, you know?
Right.
Right, so, so that's kind of the way it goes. And but we know we're trying to hold at this point, because the problem is that even though there's lots of people, very few of those people ever donate. And I know so many times I've asked people, because there are 50,000 unique users of it every month, according to our logs, approximately.
50,000.
And, you know, if only, like, every one of those people would just donate $1 a year, right? We would have way more money than we've ever had. It, you know, we wouldn't know, whether to crap or go blind. We have so much money.
Right.
But you can't get people just to donate $1 a year. I don't know why.
Huh. Well, I know
that everybody that's got a computer that's downloading audio has got to be able to afford $1 a year, because they're probably not homeless people.
True.
You know?
This is true. So you said it costs like $500 a month to keep it going. Mm-hmm. I also notice that sometimes it slows down, sometimes it doesn't appear. If people were to donate more, I'm sure that would help the cause, correct?
Well, yes, because we right now we need to upgrade our hardware. You've been using the site a lot probably, and other people have noticed that they get this database error. And
right.
What this is not bandwidth, but, you know, the database of files has become so enormous. You know, there are now, like, I'm sure over 100,000, well over, I don't even know how many, well over 100,000 different audio files on there. And so what happens when you come, you know, to the database, right? The database is running the whole thing, because it's keeping track of making sure that the most recently uploaded program is posted on the, you know, front page, and that you can search for a program in various ways, or a topic, or what have you. So people are coming onto the site and someone's saying, oh yeah, well, I'm searching for anarchism, and someone else says, yes, well, I want to see all of the Pop Defect shows that are up on there, or whatever. So every time the database is grinding, and the memory and processor are grinding away to try to spit out this information. And now what we have is overwhelmed. It can't think, I suppose you could say. It cannot think fast and hard enough for all the demands that are being made on it, you know, because the bigger the database gets,
uh-huh,
the more it has to look through to find everything that somebody is wanting. So we need more hardware to, you know, something more muscular, so we especially need money now, long story short.
And how can people donate?
Well, on the site, You can donate through PayPal, or if you just want to slip some cash or check or whatever in an envelope, you can mail it to the post office box back here in Watkins Glen that I check and get the stuff out and put it in our local credit union when we get it. And that address is send it to AFL's Radio Project at Post Office Box 302, Watkins Glen, New York, 14891.
That's 302, POB 302, Watkins Glen, New York.
14891.
14891. For folks that want to help out the AINFO's Radio Project, again, radioforall.net, which I noticed a lot of activists, a lot of leftist activists use that site, you know, but anybody can post there, right?
Right, yeah, we don't, in fact, one of the discussions that we had very early on was there was a contingent of people that wanted to have an editorial board and, you know, to screen material and make sure it wasn't, you know, one of the examples that people always used was, well, we don't want, like, Nazis, you know, putting up stuff, you know.
Right.
And the argument that I made was, listen, it's just an audio file. You know, as long as everything is labeled as to what it is, if somebody puts something like that up, if you don't want to hear it, you don't have to listen to it, and it just, you know, goes away into, you know, bite and bit land. But somebody might want it. Somebody might say, oh, well, this is great. I've been wanting to, you know, get some audio of what, like, Nazis say at their rallies, but I don't want to go to one.
Right.
Well, that's great. You know, here's some audio of that stuff. I can use it in my documentary or, you know, music mix or satire or news report or whatever.
Right.
So that was the idea that eventually prevailed, and we felt it was the best one. And so we don't say, you know, you have to be this or that. Of course, we're very strict though about things that have to do with commercials.
Uh huh.
Because we're strictly non-commercial, so nobody can be putting up commercial things or asking for money for anything they put up there, because everything you put up there is to share freely. And you can't be putting, somebody once tried to put something up and wanted people to pay money to download it. I mean, we don't have software that would make you do that.
Uh-huh.
We said, no, you can't come up on our project and ask people to. The person wrote back, you know, very indignant, well, I'm a starving blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, and so what about the rest of the people? They are too. We're activists here. And, you know, this is a thing, Bob, that amazes me about, you know, media, whatever you want to call it, alternative media or radical media or what have you. You know, when activists do a tree sit or do civil disobedience and go to jail or whatever, you don't hear activists saying, well, you know, I really think you should pay me to do this tree sit or to be arrested and go to jail. Yet for some reason, people think because they do their activism with a microphone in their hand that for some reason they should be paid. And I, quite frankly, I don't understand this, but I think it has had some very damaging effects in, you know, within the world of community radio.
Right.
I mean, because believe me, he'll say, oh, yeah, well, all this work I have to do this show, it's like, yeah, fine. Try being in federal prison. You know, try being in federal prison or some other prison for a 10-year sentence like some people.
Right.
You know, so that. So right. I just don't think that that's, like, I don't think that's legitimate, because almost anybody can afford to do alternative media without being paid. Now, I understand if somebody's going to do a daily program, that's a different story maybe, because it takes so much work that, you know, it's difficult to maintain, you know, jobs and life and all that. But for people who are doing a weekly show or every couple of weeks or a month or producing an occasional special, there's always some way to fit it into your life if that's what you really want to do.
Right. Yeah.
You know? So anyway, that kind of veered off from the question you asked, but it just came to mind because it was part and parcel with the philosophy that went behind the way that we set the project up.
Uh-huh.
Because nobody is paid to do anything. And we set it up so that it would be easy to sustain over years, that it would require minimal intervention from the Radio Project Collective. Because when something requires a lot of intervention, therefore a lot of time, then people do start to grumble. And we thought, well, if the only thing we have to pay for is the bandwidth and the hardware, we can run it at a minimum and be sustainable.
Yeah.
We don't have to argue about a lot of things. You know, there's little to argue about.
Yeah.
And
there's no comment either, which I like.
Yeah, no comments. It's not, all those things with the comments and what have you, they attract trolls. I mean, quite frankly, we've never had the bandwidth and processor power and everything to spare, you know, for that kind of stuff. See, the show, the site was started originally for radio producers. At the time that we started, all anybody had was a 28.8 modem.
Yeah.
And it was a huge, you were around then. So, you know, it was a huge deal to try to get anything up or down. And we didn't imagine that we would be, you know, now in the days of broadband, there's just individuals seeking content who can readily use the site. But at that time, it was really difficult.
Yeah.
And the idea behind it was that it would be like a wire service for radical radio. And that the idea was that, okay, you know, any group of people who were, you know, running a free radio station or whatever could pull together enough to get to some, you know, Pentium computer and download audio, and then they could put it on the radio and share it with everybody else.
Yeah.
And that was the idea behind it. We didn't expect it to be a public content provider. And that's what's happened over time, is people have found things. And we didn't want to exclude people, because a lot of people have no opportunity to hear any of this stuff on any radio station, because there's so few radio stations like Freak Radio around in the country. So most people have a wasteland when they turn on their radio.
Yeah.
So we can't say to people, no, you're denied this content because you can't listen to it on a radio, because ultimately all of us are making this radio because we want to change the world by changing what people think and know about, and hopefully that impacts action in the world.
Yeah.
So we're kind of, you know, stuck with a conundrum, but what can you do? You know, we're just doing our part.
So Radio for All is basically run by a collective of people?
Yeah, there's just three of us at this point.
Do you have weekly meetings, or probably not? But
oh, no, not at all. We never have any meetings at all.
Wow.
it's because, for one thing, we're all now in three different places. And the only time that we only deal with something when there's basically a problem. Because the different people have their roles. Of, you know, work that they do with respect to it. And there isn't, you know, I mean, there's not like, and when there's an issue, like we have to, you know, upgrade the bandwidth, or there's a whole, you know, big snafu, something's wrong,
right.
Something has to be done, some hardware has to be replaced, some money has to be raised, then we'll communicate by email. In fact, the whole thing was created online on listservs.
Wow.
And developed with people who nobody knew each other, and of course some of us eventually did meet each other, but others of us have never met. I mean, there's people that came and worked and went and have still never met because they were all over the place. Literally, even all, you know, all over the world.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, so, you know, people talk about, you know, the internet as being some sort of virtual space, but that is not my experience of it. It's a very real space where you can meet, online, and you can create things that manifest in the real world and affect people's lives.
We're talking to Lynn Gary here, host and producer of Unwelcome Guests, also a part of the Radio for All, A-Info's radio project. Check out radioforall.net, and that's radio the number for all.net or unwelcomeguests.org. And please donate. Help Radio for All. A lot of times the site goes down. They need help. They need hardware. They need donations. Check out the website, radioforall.net, or donate P.O. Box 302, Watkins Glen, New York, 14891.
And I want to ask people to please donate to Freak Radio that you're listening to now, because you are very fortunate to have the station, which, by the way, Bob, you should know, many people in community radio regard it as one of the finest community radio stations in the country and perhaps the world.
Wow.
So it's a very fine radio station. It is an example of what community radio station should be, and it's interesting, informative, educational, confrontational, iconoclastic, and fun.
Well, we just hitting our 13 years here this month. March, we'll be 13 years old.
Oh gosh, that's so wonderful! Happy birthday!
Only one raid.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you very
much.
This
is an enormous, and I mean, it's not my interview, you see, but I would ask you how you keep going. Because it's hard enough to keep anything going, but when you're in a situation that doubly leaves you open to assault of the type that you have with a free radio station,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I know there have been challenges for you folks over the years and times when people got really burned out, but you've made it. How have you done it?
One day at a time, I guess. I don't know. We do a collective. We have a collective. A lot of times we have issues with each other and stuff, but we get the job done because we feel like it needs to be done. I mean, from the days when our local paper started bagging on Food Not Bombs is one of the reasons why we started the station, because we couldn't get our opinion out other than flyers on the street or something. So that's when we started the station. I don't know. We just keep it going. You know, it's kind of like having a kid, because it's kind of weird, because my kid was born like a year after the station started. And my kid's 12, so the station's 13. So I've been able to actually see it grow alongside my kid, and I kind of look at it that way, you know, as part of my family, you know. And I don't know. I really don't know. I'll have to sit down and really think about that and maybe write something.
I think that makes a lot of sense. That's actually really beautiful, the way you put that, I think.
It's been a hell of an experience, I have to say, you know, and I've never done any kind of radio before in my life. How about you? Have you done radio? Have you come from?
Well, yes, I had. I got my start at Pacifica Radio at KBFK in Los Angeles.
Good station.
Community radio station there. You know, as someone who wandered in to, you know, when they said, "Oh, come answer phones," during our pledge drive,
mm-hmm.
and I went, "Oh, I don't believe it! I've come home." You know, I felt like, you know, a lot of times living in Los Angeles, I felt very much like a fish out of water. I was not, I didn't even know about like this very large community of people,
mm-hmm.
who felt as I did. And, you know, found the society around them largely repulsive and thought there was more to life than how to get a BMW to match your underwear.
Right.
And I walked into KPFK, and it was like, oh, I've come home. This is the only, like, shining light in the darkness. And so I felt fiercely in love with it, and it consumed my life. And I ultimately went to work there on the staff. And then these, Democratic Leadership Council types decided that it was just a waste having all this riffraff use a big radio station, and it could be of great use to propagandize for the Democratic Party or what have you.
Right.
And be serious and effective, a modern, relevant, effective radio station. And so they made a move to, like, sanitize it and take it over. And I was one of the people who resisted that, so I was banned and fired back in 1995.
Wow.
And this struggle went on for like 8 years, and it became very famous, you know, became like headlines, because eventually, after they picked off the little people, right, then they started going for the big guns when nobody was left, and then it hit the news, you know, when famous award-winning broadcasters were hauled off in handcuffs or, you know, banned from buildings or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
wow.
So that was how I got my start in radio and where I received my, early training, you know, in community radio.
Right.
Then, of course, it's an ongoing learning experience. I've learned so much doing this show, you know. I mean, I learn, you know, all the time, not only about the art of communicating, but, of course, also all of the things that I cover, because to figure out what I should share with people, what I think is important, you know, one has to constantly, you know, read and listen and look at things and study and try to understand what's going on. And so that, because you don't understand it, you can't make a very coherent communication to someone that's listening to you. And if it's, your communication isn't, you know, coherent on some level, why should they listen to you?
Right. Well, hey, speaking of that, your 400th show is called The Contradictions of Reason and Belief. You want to give people a little brief synopsis of the show, and they can download it at radioforall.net, by the way.
Yes. Okay, I'll preface it by saying it this way. I've been a lifelong atheist. When I was 7 years old was when I realized that I didn't believe in a supreme being and that created the universe and, you know, watched over the affairs of humanity. And, of course, this is a very, when you have this position and this view, you're constantly impinged upon in this world by people who insist that you must, you know, believe in a supreme being, and in fact presume that you do. Of course, lately, over the last decade or so, those people have become, like, you know, militantly religious, you know, wanting to use, the power of the state to ram it down everyone's throat. Okay, I give that as a preface, because, so lately, there's been a pushback, and there's been a number of these people like Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and who have been writing books, against the belief in God and et cetera, and have, you know, received a lot of publicity and, of course, are met by cheering crowds, which is understandable. And I feel like cheering, too, just because somebody is standing up and saying, listen, you know, we don't accept those beliefs, and we don't have to, you know. But, okay, by the same token, there were things in their message some of the things they said, and I listened to a whole lot of their different talks and what have you, that was bothering me, because they seem to think that they seem to have this view that science and reason were the answer to our problems as human beings. And from what I have seen of the problems we have, that I would say that 50% of them have been caused by religion and the ideas that it puts forward, and 50% have been caused by science and the ideas that it has allowed capital to put into the material world for fun and profit. You know, namely, in other words, we have on the one hand, we have different types of oppression that happen that are, demanded by capital for their profit and justified by religion. To put that a short way. So I said, okay, there's all of these contradictions. And I can't see it as a black and white thing. Yeah, well, religion is bad and reason is good. And so everything in the show, there's a few different things, but it touches on many things, that very topic, the totalitarian nature of some of the things that these, like, anti-religious speakers are saying. There's a wonderful talk by, a New York Times columnist, war correspondent turned author, Chris Hedges, who is a theist, who was once a divinity student but decided not to become ordained. And he gave a very profound talk that someone at KPFT contacted me and said, hey, this was on our air and you would love to air this on your show. And indeed I did. And there's also other things that deal with the subject of population, because population and the problem of human overpopulation is another thing that has this woven through with religion and religious issues and obsession. And science, and the fact that science, although people like to talk about it as this pure thing, it's marched down the centuries hand in hand with eugenicists and racial supremacists and this type of thing. So once again, that's why I called it the contradiction, because I felt like, you know, there's these two camps, and you know what? I'm not in either of them. And because I see, like, in all of them, this, all of them have been patriarchal. All of them have been racist. All of them have, been hierarchical and exploitative. So anyway, that's kind of what the show addresses. That was a much longer answer than I hope to give. I'm sorry, but it's very hard to describe.
Well, Lynn, I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with me here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Again, we're talking to Lynn Gary of Unwelcome Guests, producer and host, as well as part of the Radio for All Collective. Check out unwelcomeguests.org. And again, please donate to Radio for All. They desperately need donations right now. Check out the website radioforall.net or donate to P.O. Box 302, Watkins Glen, New York, 14891. And Lynn, I really appreciate you taking the time to spot.
I can't tell you how honored I am. I am so honored to speak to you and to speak to folks in Santa Cruz and to wish Freak Radio again a happy 13th birthday. So are you going to have some sort of a bar mitzvah for it or something?
Every time we try to plan a benefit since the 10-year anniversary, we've always end up like, I don't know, it just hadn't happened. But I'm sure we'll figure out something here. Maybe we're waiting for the 15th year. I don't know.
Okay.
Who
All
knows
right, take care.
What we're doing. But could you hang on a line a second? I'll talk to you a little bit off air. And I'm going to play this track for you. It's an artist called Swati, and the track's called Big Bang.